Welcome into the install with Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Greg, it has been an interesting week in Nashville, but we have week one results. We've got a lot of exciting games coming up this weekend and certainly a lot of interesting football, if nothing else, to talk about. Did you enjoy the slate?
Yeah, it's always, you know, week one is fun. And, you know, there's always a few crazy games. And I guess down in Nashville, they probably think that Sunday's game was one of the crazy games this weekend.
There's some people are still shook up. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. It's Wednesdays. I'm still getting fire the OC calls for reasons.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know how that goes. You lose a game and it's, you know, it's, you got to blame somebody.
Mike Vrabel's seen enough of these things. He's not under that much duress.
I doubt he's panicking.
He's okay. But the Titans did lose the game. Brian Daboll goes for two, puts the Giants up one. They close it out because Tennessee misses the field goal at the end. That's not the important stuff. The important stuff is how things looked from the Titans' perspective and a big opponent coming up against the Buffalo Bills on Monday Night Football. Greg, I think that the thing that we really keyed in on all week long is how often they ran Derrick Henry on first and 10 versus how much more effective they were on passing the ball on early downs, and kind of the transition that you and I have talked about all offseason long to see if there's that kind of evolution for them to be a more efficient offense.
Well, you know, again, first of all, they had great success on first down, both running the ball and throwing the ball. Henry was 17 for 73 on first down. Now, that's 4.3 yards a rush, which every coach would take. What was lacking in this game was there were really no big, big explosive runs by Henry. He had an 18-yarder, and other than that, there were no real big runs, which I think everybody just gets used to him making every game, Buck. But yeah, there weren't those in this game. So 17 for 73 is pretty good. Now, Tannehill was 9 for 10 for 135 and two TDs, with six of those completions resulting in first downs. So, yes, you could look at those numbers and say, wow, they should throw it more. But, you know, my guess is that when they evaluate this game and their first down plays and their first down approach, they're going to feel pretty good about it within the context of what they do. You know, I mean, they are a running football team first and foremost. I don't think fans in Nashville would probably say, let's stop giving the ball to Derrick Henry. So overall, I think their first down ratio was probably what they would like. And they were very successful on first down.
And I think that's the best context to put it in for people who have harsh reactions, right? Because that's been the topic.
Well, that's the nature of sports, Buck. You and I know that.
Sure, but I think this is the perfect opportunity to kind of walk them through after they've had a couple of days to cool off exactly what they're seeing here. Because I think it's the first down runs coupled with the, you know, the plays that, or the play calls that everybody assumes to be obvious with the results in hand, right? If you have a third and one, give it to Derrick Henry. That's the way that a Titans fan operates.
And by the way,
and then they see an end around to a tight end and they lose it.
Yeah, that play, you could, you know, that's one of those plays, you know, and again, it's easy to say that they should give it to Derek. And do I think they should have? Yes. But I've been doing this too long and know too many coaches and know, you know, how much time they put in, that I don't sit around and rip coaches. You know, I think that's too easy.
Sure.
You know, I'll give you a great example of, you know, when plays work, you rarely hear fans say, wow, that's really good. But the Hilliard 7-yard touchdown reception on first and goal, that was a beautifully designed play. You don't see that particular play that often in the NFL for the simple reason that to have a vertical seam route out of the backfield in that tight a space is rarely seen in the NFL. So that was a beautifully schemed tight red zone concept, which obviously was game plan because that was either their first or second possession, was it not?
As the first possession.
So there you go. So that means it was a game plan scheme play throughout the week. That, hey, when we get in the low red zone, this is what we're going to do. You rarely see that concept. I remember seeing it. I'm sure it's happened since. So I don't want to say the last time because I'm sure it's not the last time, but I just happen to remember this play really well. I saw a very similar play when Todd Gurley was in his prime with the Rams, and the Rams ran a very similar play and hit Gurley on a touchdown where he was out of the backfield running basically a vertical seam in the low red zone because there's just not a lot of space.
Right. And I think that's a kind of, you know, if you're looking at positive things, like Dontrell Hilliard is capable of running those routes. Like, they trust him to be able to game plan from do that. And I heard Mark Sanchez articulate this well after I watched it back on the broadcast. You have to have a running back who understands landmarks when the surface area is that small to be able to execute that route.
Yeah, I mean, it was a three-man boundary route concept. And the other two routes basically opened up the vertical seam for Hilliard. You know, I call it a condensed H-seam, halfback seam. That's, you know, but there was kind of a natural rub created by Westbrook Ahini's route. So, and Hilliard beat Calitro, who was picked up, who was picked by Westbrook Ahini. So it was really a beautifully schemed play. And as I said, that was clearly game plan. And my point is not that fans, hey, look, that's fans. You want them to be passionate. That's what you want in your fans. So I'm not saying the fans shouldn't be upset or passionate, but my guess is no one's talking about that play because they lost.
Right. That's exactly right. Yeah. And all of it changes if Randy Bullock hits a 47-yard field goal with that, which has largely nothing to do with the rest of this. Although that 2-minute drive, Greg, I thought that they executed well, and it was good to see Kyle Phillips kind of taken from the practice field to the game, what we've been talking about all offseason
long. And they executed really well, given that DC Wink Martindale for the Giants was really aggressive with pressure and man coverage. They went zero on the second play. Tannehill knew where to go with the football. There wasn't any sense of confusion or panic. Tannehill was not playing fast or unsettled. Obviously, he made the big time throw to Phillips for 21 yards versus cover one and Darnay Holmes, the slot corner, to get the Titans in field goal range, which, you know, I was watching the game on TV at that point. You know, I'm sitting in my house and that game was on at that moment. And I mean, I don't have a big rooting interest, you know, necessarily in these games. You know, I just love the games to be close and competitive, you know.
Sure.
And I just automatically assume Bullock's making that field goal. I mean, I didn't even give it a second thought.
Nor did any. I mean, there was a Randy chant in the stadium, Greg. It was terrible.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest with you, like I said, it wasn't a rooting interest, but I kind of at that moment, because I just assumed it was a gimme, I just felt bad for Daniel Jones. But, you know, other than that, I didn't, you know, it didn't matter to me who necessarily won the game. But I was truly surprised when he missed the field goal.
Yeah, no, I thought everything that they did to execute up to that point, there were some penalties and all these different things, but I thought on the whole, their game plan was solid to put them in a position to win the game.
Yeah, they just didn't have big plays, and that's the reason you score 20 points and not 30, because like I said, there were no big runs by Henry, which we've all come to expect that he has at least one in every game and maybe more depending on the game. You know, we're so used to Henry as at 27 for 150, as opposed to, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he did not have 100, correct?
Correct. And he's had games like that early in his career, early at the start of seasons. It's pretty typical to see Derek kind of.
And even in the past game, if memory serves me correctly, was Hilliard's touchdown their longest completion, 31 yards?
Yes, that's correct. The second one.
Yeah. So, I mean, which came on a little bit of a I wouldn't call it a bust, but I think Crowder was just slow to react to the fact that, you know, that he had Hilliard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the opposite side of things, Greg, Saquon Barkley, it was good to see him return to form. He had a couple of explosive runs in this game, a rare enough thing for us to see. I thought their front was active, and certainly Jeffrey Simmons was a problem throughout the course of it.
Jeffrey Simmons welcomed the rookie Uzudu to the NFL on a number of plays, and also the other left guard, Bredson. He had some really good snaps. Simmons really stood out on tape to me. You know, one issue for them, and we kind of knew this would be an issue, so you can't be surprised by it, is much of their pressure came from the inside. They did not really get much edge pressure.
Mm-hmm. And I think looking at that, Greg, the thing that also surprised was the idea that their run defense, they're typically so sound that way, 238 yards by this Titans defense. Harold Landry, you know, was tied for second on the team with tackles last year.
Yeah.
Not that he's on every play like that, and it's not that one player makes that big of a difference, but it was pretty interesting to see Saquon be efficient in the first half and then them go to him heavy in the second half to exploit the Titans defense.
And the Giants came out, they didn't really start to feature Barkley until their first possession of the second quarter.
Yeah.
So that was not their initial game plan. It may have been just to get Barkley into the game, you know, coming off injury. And this is the first real game. You know, and again, what normally gives you yards in the run game, you know, those kinds of numbers that you just said, big runs. And Barkley had a 68 yarder, and then he had the 30 yard, something like a 30 yarder that was punched out, which, hey, by the way, that whole game is different. What happens if that ball, I think that was on the final drive, 33 yards, if that ball goes out of the end zone, we'd be having a different conversation.
Right. Heads up play by Christian Fulton to poke it out of there.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the Giants ran this particular play a number of times and had mixed results. It's what I call a CG pull scheme, guard center pull scheme. It was kind of foundational. The Barkley 33-yarder on the final drive came on that, as did his 68-yarder.
Yeah. Going back to the Giants and on the defensive side of things, I thought the Titans had a nice protection plan against Wink Martindale, and I thought the rookie right tackle held up well for the most part. He had a false start. Other than that, Greg, I thought he played at a high level.
So did I, because I was watching him, and I'm glad you mentioned that, because I wanted to speak to that. I thought he played really, really well. I mean, you know, just watching that game, you would have not have thought he was a rookie. Now, obviously, the Giants did not have their two best theoretical pass rushers.
Correct.
Ojulari is, because he's done it in the league. Thibodeau is an unknown, just because he's not done it yet at this level. But I thought that Petit Frere played exceptionally well, both in the run game and in the pass game. He had actually a block in the run game, and I'm trying to remember the play. I'm looking at my notes because I take notes when I watch all this stuff, sure. And I'm trying to see where it was. Oh, it was actually Henry's 18-yard run.
Searching HVAC near here.
Right here, ma'am. How can we help?
Wow, nobody local? Huh.
Wait, what? We are an HVAC company literally in your neighborhood. Why is she not seeing us?
Just all the big chains. Well, it is what it is.
What in the... Can you not see us?
Nope, they can't see you. Because you're buried deep in the list of local HVAC providers. You are invisible online. Introducing Cumulus Boost. Get a boost, get found, get on the map. Learn more at cumulusboost.com.
The longest run of the day for Derek.
Yes, it was a counter. Brewer was the puller, but I thought Petit Frere was outstanding climbing to the second level to block Crowder. I mean, it was just done exceptionally well. You saw the athleticism, you saw the movement, the balance, the body control, you know, the athletic traits that he has. But overall, Buck, you are 100% right. You would not have known in this game that that was a rookie right tackle.
Yeah, no, I think of all the different things that that Titans fans have been out of shape about, the production by the rookies in this game, whether it's McCreary, Burks getting a couple catches for first downs on six targets, Kyle Phillips being a consistent target for Ryan Tannehill, and the protection with a rookie right tackle. I think all those things are kind of what Mike Vrabel was most excited to talk about after.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this was a really good starting point for Burks. I think that this was, you know, given that he had sort of the difficult and chaotic offseason through training camp, you know, obviously the spotlight's on him being the number one pick and the hope that he replaces A.J. Brown to some extent. I thought it was a pretty solid opening performance, and I think there'll be better things to come. I was kind of fascinated by their defense, Buck, because – you know, I'm watching the tape, and, you know, when I watch the games at home, I have no problem saying this, you know, I just enjoy football. So I just watch the red zone. So I'm not sitting at home taking notes, you know, or anything like that.
Sure.
Just enjoying football on Sunday after, you know, my 75-hour work week. So, I'm not seeing what personnel packages are out there and all that. And then I put the tape on and I go, wow, they've got a nickel package and they have a dime package that's different.
And yes.
And I thought that was fascinating that McCreary and Dime, and they did play 12 snaps of Dime. McCreary, who played outside in base and nickel, became a slot corner in Dime. And then Farley came in and played left corner in Dime. So, again, obviously, that's the way they wanted to go. And then Amadi, who hasn't been there very long, you know, he played almost every snap.
Yeah, he filled the Elijah Molden base look role. And you're right, we noticed that in the press box as well, Greg, because when Farley and Josh Kalu, their other safety, came on the field in that dime look, that was the first thing we noticed, is that McCreary bumped inside. We asked Vrabel about that after the game, and he said that's basically what Roger has been able to handle so far in practice. So they said, okay, we'll keep it to that, and we'll give Caleb some snaps on the outside as well.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see, is Lonnie Johnson on IR or just missed this game?
No, he was inactive. He was inactive this week.
But wasn't he hurt?
He hasn't been practicing, correct.
Yeah, he's been hurt. I'm curious to see when he's healthy if he becomes the dime safety, because I think he's probably a better pass coverage defender than Kalu, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, obviously, he's got to practice.
No, I think they've been churning a lot of stuff at that position in particular, and I think Lonnie Johnson is somebody who they seem to like. Greg, there was a lot of interesting results all over the league this weekend, but I think certainly looking at the kind of things now, the results of Broncos Seahawks not important for the purposes of our conversation, but I thought that Nathaniel Hackett and Russell Wilson together in our first sample size of them, I thought it was pretty interesting to watch how that meshed, because you saw things that Russell Wilson necessarily has tried to move away from. It doesn't seem like he prefers to play under center as opposed to the shotgun, and how that affects their run scheme.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Buck, because we're doing this on Wednesday, and since I'm one person, I have not watched that side of the ball on tape yet. So I just saw a good amount of the game on TV, my takeaway, and then I can get to something that I think is being totally overlooked, but I thought was as impressive as anything that happened this weekend. But my sense watching the Broncos on TV was I didn't sense any rhythm or timing to their offense whatsoever. I think they have to work through that, and I think it's going to take time. You know, I guess when all was said and done, I was surprised they didn't run the ball more.
Yeah.
You know, again, you know, we'll see. We know that Russell wants to be the man, and that's theoretically why he wanted out of you know, one of the reasons we heard why he wanted out of Seattle. So we'll wait and see. But the game and player I really want to mention, and maybe it's because the opponent they played is not viewed as a great opponent, but no one is talking about Jameis Winston. And Jameis Winston had a fourth quarter that was absolutely outstanding against our old buddy Dean Pease.
Sure.
You know, again, I'm just going to mention the stats only because they're worth mentioning. The tape tells you how brilliant he was in both his ability to see where to go with it and his throwing ability. But in the fourth quarter alone, Jameis was 13 for 16 for 213 yards and two touchdowns. Think about that for a minute.
No, especially who we're talking about. Like, I know there's been clips of him all over Twitter being a bit of a goober, because Jameis is, but like, yeah, he was truly impressive when we were watching that game in the press box before the Titans kicked off.
I mean, I'm telling you, that was a big, big time performance, because Dean Pease did a lot of things. I mean, they don't have great, great defensive personnel, but Dean Pease, you and I both know, he's very multiple. There's a lot of disguise. There's a lot of late movement. He shows you a lot. You know, so I thought, and Jameis was poised, he was composed. There's never been a question about Jameis's ability to throw the football. It's, you know, the other stuff. And by the way, I remember meeting Jameis at a Super Bowl when he was still in Tampa. And that guy is really smart. He's all football. He can talk football all day, and he loves to talk football all day.
Yeah, no, it was cool to see him having success there at the end of the game. And you know, Titans fans keeping an eye on Marcus Mariota in Atlanta. It was a terrible fumble on the
five-yard
line that they had to kind of help turn that game around outside of Jameis performing at a high level. Greg, a lot of fun games coming up in week two. What can people expect on the matchup show on ESPN on Saturday morning and then Sunday morning on ESPN?
Yeah,
we're always streaming on ESPN Plus.
It's actually, you know, an interesting week of games. And obviously one of the big ones is Titans-Bills that will absolutely be in our show. And, you know, they played week six a year ago. Titans obviously won that game. But, you know, the Bills offense moved the ball pretty well in that game. So
I thought they ran the ball well.
Yeah. And I'm really curious, you know, the one thing, look, I'm not there in your building, you know, at the Titans, but I would imagine that Mike Vrabel is really good at getting a team ready after a tough loss. So I know this game's up in Buffalo. The Bills really have an outstanding D-line, a great rotation. I mean, they have eight or nine guys they can run out there, Buck, who are really good. Now, last year, Henry had the one long run for a touchdown, I believe. So he ended up with big, big yardage. And that's what, like we said, that's what you kind of expect from Henry and the Titans. But that's a big game in our show. The Bucs Saints is fascinating because Brady is 0-4 against the Saints and his numbers are bad. I think Dolphins and Ravens, I do a piece on Tua in this new offense. I think Mike McDaniel has such a great understanding of what Tua's strengths are and what his limitations are and how you structure your pass game to maximize his strengths and minimize his limitations. So I do a piece that kind of reflects that. I think Vikings-Eagles, the second Monday night game, is really a fascinating game. You know, two teams thought to do really well this year, and of course it's only 1 week. They both lost their cards at Raiders. That becomes a really intriguing game as well. So these are the, you know, games, some of the games we're doing in our show.
Going back to the Tua quickly, and then we'll wrap up for the day, Greg. I watched that Dolphins-Patriots game back, just the condensed version, to see what observations were there to be had. And I thought that you spoke correctly about it, or you spoke accurately to the idea that Mike McDaniel really fundamentally understands what Tua can give him in that offense. And I think that's the thing that made him special in San Francisco with Jimmy Garoppolo. It's just a fundamental understanding of his personnel and how to maximize it.
I think one of the reasons why speed became so important to them, not that they'll never be a deep ball. I don't want people to think they'll never be a deep ball. But and certain deep ball throws are not arm strength throws. You know, a true post throw or a fade, they're not arm strength throws. But there's no question Tua does not have a big arm. The true deep balls lose energy on the back end with Tua. He doesn't really make those throws well. So to me, the reason they got speed is because that backs off the defense and they can't disrupt Hill and Waddle off the line of scrimmage. So if you can't disrupt them off the line of scrimmage, and by the way, they used motion more than any team in the league week one. That's another reason you get free access off the ball. So if you get corners off, motion, free access, the timing rhythm element can't be disrupted and the ball gets out of Tua's hands. So I think that's the reason for the speed, not so much because you're going to see 70-yard bombs.
AFC East is going to be a lot of fun to watch this year, I feel like. Maybe not the Patriots. We'll see.
I mean, it is Belichick, and I'm not saying they're going to end up, you know, going 15-2 now. And I don't think, you know, offensively, I think they will see how it all plays out. But you have to believe that at some point, you know, they'll play better.
If anybody's earned the benefit of the doubt, it would be Bill Belichick.
I would say that's pretty fair, yes.
Greg Cosell of NFL Films. Check out the Matchup Show. Set your DVR. Always streaming on ESPN+. Greg, I'm looking forward to the trip to Buffalo. I've never been. I've never been a part of or witnessed Bills Mafia in real life in their home environment, but I'm looking forward to the trip.
Yeah, I was in Buffalo maybe 100 years ago, earlier in my career at Films, but it's been a long time. I remember it being kind of a cool city because it's not really a big city in a strict sense.
And certainly they love their football team.
Oh, my God.
The Bills have played some fun games in the last couple of years between Mike Vrabel and Sean McDermott.
This is a big one for the Titans because, I mean, it's a tough place to play. Bills are super talented. And, you know, going 0-2 is a tough deal.
No question about it, especially when this division looks the way that it does. Always a pleasure, Greg. We appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to our conversation next week.
Thanks, Buck.